A white man? No!
Welcome to The End Sub is a White Man. I'm Sarah.
And I'm Emily.
And we're back with another Criminal Minds recap. Wow. No, I have a lot to say.
You know what? I did not really remember this one.
No.
And I don't really know how enjoyed
I could
it.
Not. I don't know how I could have forgotten this.
Yeah.
We are discussing Corazon,
yeah,
which originally aired January 19th, 2011. Yeah, I mean, why wait? We'll just dive right in. Yep. I have so many notes on this episode.
Yes.
It starts with a very stylized opening.
Yes. So Reed is in like a hospital waiting room, mm-hmm, and he's obviously very nervous. And yes, he looks like he's approximately 12 years old.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Like he looks like he's my son's age.
Yes. Like, he's got great mismatched socks.
Yeah.
During all of this.
It's like interspersed with all of these other, it just keeps cutting back and forth.
Mm-hmm.
And there's like a ritual sacrifice with like a bird happening in an old house. And you keep seeing this old white house and there's a gate swinging open. Mm-hmm. And then you see that he's getting an MRI because he's been having headaches.
Mm-hmm.
And they're like, do you have a headache right now? And he's like, yes. And they're like, how long has it been going on? And he's like, I don't know. And I'm like, yes, you do.
Yeah, like not
just give
long.
Them an answer.
Right.
He says not long, and then he's like 2 days, and you're, mm-hmm, like, that's a very long time. You are smart enough to know that that's, mm-hmm, too long for a headache to be going on.
Yeah.
He's
like wearing his sunglasses indoors, so you know it's a very bad headache.
Yes. Then we see that a man has been left dead after this sacrifice thing with like little cowrie shells over his eyes, mm-hmm, and mouth.
Yes. And my first thought was, oh. They never do well with a non-white demographic, so where is this headed?
Yes. So Reed arrives at the BAU for the briefing. Mm-hmm. Garcia says that they're going to the land of Bermuda shorts, and everyone has their turn taking a guess.
I love this. Because
they're like, Palm Beach, Las Vegas. Mm-hmm. And then Hanch is just like, please. She's like, okay, it's Miami. Fun sucker. So three murders have taken place in the last week within a mile of each other. All the victims were killed in the places that they lived, all with different methods of murder, but all left with shells in their eyes and mouths. They say that one victim was a homeless man, another was a sex worker, and the third was an unemployed janitor, which is a description I find very weird, mm-hmm, because that is your job. And if you are unemployed, you are not a janitor.
Right. Like the only thing he can do is be a janitor.
Yeah, exactly. Like I wouldn't just like if I didn't have my job anymore, I wouldn't describe myself as an unemployed teacher.
Right. Like,
I would just be a person.
No.
Not associated with my profession.
Once you're a janitor, always a janitor.
Yeah, it was so weird.
Uh-huh.
Reed says that cowrie shells are significant to several Afro-Caribbean traditions, and Prentice says that the upside-down crucifix looks like Satanism.
Uh-oh.
And despite Rossi being supposedly the debunker of satanic ritual murder, mm-hmm, he doesn't throw his coffee mug across the table at her. Just be like, that's not a thing. Then Seaver's like, so this could all be religious? And I'm like, oh, right, Seaver. She's here.
Oh, she's still here.
I'm like, let's see if she adds anything whatsoever to this episode. She has not yet.
Don't get your hopes up.
Hotch reminds everybody that the killer is escalating, which should go without saying.
Yeah.
Because that is what they all do.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so there's only like a day or two until he strikes again.
Yeah, because it was like 4 days and then 2 days. Mm-hmm. So they're like, well, he's going to kill somebody tomorrow.
Yeah. Sure.
Then we get our first quote. No man chooses evil because it is evil. He only mistakes it for happiness, the good he seeks. Mary Wollstonecraft Shelley. So they note that the three methods of murder escalated very quickly in like personal violence. Mm-hmm. Like the first one was a gunshot, the second one bludgeoned, and then the third guy was like hacked to death with a machete.
Yeah.
Like that's a very steep escalation.
Yeah, very violent.
But all the attacks came from behind, so they say he wasn't interested in like watching his victims suffer. But all of the mutilation was done post-mortem. Reed suggests that some of the elements of the scene are reminiscent of Santeria, which doesn't call for human sacrifice, just animal sacrifices. But there is a deity that has cowrie shells over his face. He shows them the picture in a book, which is similar to how the bodies were found.
And Reed's obviously very distracted during all of this with his migraine.
Which is weird because, like, people get migraines. Like, he's being, like, so weirdly secretive about it. Like, why doesn't he just say, like, sorry, I have a really bad headache.
Right. I don't know why he's lying to all of them about having a migraine. Like, or trying to pretend like he doesn't when it's very obvious that he does.
Like, right? People get migraines.
Right.
It's fine.
Right. It's not weird to go to work and be like, oh, I have a really bad headache today. Sorry.
Yeah.
But he wants to pretend like everything is fine, I guess. I don't know.
So Reed and Morgan head to the community center in this neighborhood. So they're walking through the neighborhood and there's just, they talk to a guy and they're like, where's the community center? And he's just like out in his front yard butchering a goat.
Like you do.
Yeah. And you see the head like.
When I was in college, I lived in this house off campus and across the street was this little like Turkish deli and they would just
sounds delicious.
Yes, but you would just look outside on a hot summer's day and there would just be skinned goats, like whole goats hanging from a wire and across the street from our house out the front window, like just the whole deal. It was not picturesque. So I get it. I get what's going on in this neighborhood. Yeah.
So Morgan notes that Reed doesn't really seem like himself because he's not telling him any fun facts. Mm-hmm. And then the neighborhood's like the Alipata neighborhood. Mm-hmm. And he's like, well, it comes from a Native American word for alligator. He's like, there he is.
All I could think was that Reed looks like a member of the Wonders with the sunglasses.
He does. Yeah.
Right?
Yes. I was trying to figure it. I'm like, it's like very like Roy Orbison.
Yes. Yes.
So Hotch and Prentice go to the crime scene where the detective tells them that he sees lots of animal sacrifices, but not normally cats because the latest victim's cat was also beheaded.
Yeah.
Gross. It's like, really? Do you see a lot of animal sacrifices?
I really doubt that you do. Like, see, this is why I was worried when we say a non-white demographic, they're like, oh yeah, these guys and their animal sacrifices, whatever.
Cause like
what?
Even if they are, like, practicing Santeria and there is animal sacrifice, which I believe they do, like, chickens and stuff.
Yeah.
Why would the cops see a lot of that?
Why would they see a lot of it? Who is calling them in on all these animal sacrifices?
Right? Like, there's no reason to think that he'd be called in on all of these cases.
I
don't know. Whatever. There's no fingerprints anywhere except for the victims. But there is one bloody footprint. There are chalk designs drawn on the floor. But there's no sign of forced entry or a struggle, so they suspect that the victim knew the killer and was willing to participate in at least part of the ritual, like up until the point where he got hacked to death with a machete. And Hotch says that he is symbolically silencing the victims.
There's a lot of information that Hotch and Prentice are giving us at this crime scene. Yeah. It's like,
for two people that have absolutely no idea what's going on.
Yeah, they take a look around and they know exactly what's going on here.
Yeah. So Morgan and Reed talked to a man at the community center named Mr. Mercado.
I love this guy.
He knew the first victim, and he also has a cute little dog named Tootie.
He has a tiny little dog.
His little chihuahua, he's and he just holds it.
Yeah. He's got a thick accent and a tiny dog, and he's quite the character. Yeah.
He tells them that the victim, Eduardo, had cancer in his man parts.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
But that he was feeling a lot better these days, not because he was going to a doctor, because they just make you sicker and poison you, but was undergoing some sort of religious-based cleansing treatment. Mm-hmm. So they're not really specific about it.
Yeah.
He suggests that perhaps he made the saints mad and that's why he was killed. And then a worker comes over to get Mr. Mercado's tray and he seems kind of like spooked by him. Like he's like, oh, I gotta go now. Like walks away.
He's like, oh, there's a menacing man of color here at the community center. Suspicious.
Yeah. So the Morgan goes over to try to talk to him, and he's like, I don't talk to cops without a warrant. Mm. You're like, probably a good move, man.
Yeah, that's pretty smart, actually.
Yeah. So then we see Garcia using sage to smudge her office. Yes. and they tell her that she needs to find an outside expert in this religion, this religion that they don't know what it is, but she's going to go find an expert in this nondescript religion.
Yes.
Sure. Then we see Mr. Mercado from the community center being attacked.
Like, oh no.
You're like, oh no, Tootie.
I know.
Reed, meanwhile, is dealing with his migraine. Did you notice what exactly he was choosing to do?
No.
When he was, like, sitting there thinking, and it was, like, all the, like, flashing images and stuff.
Yeah, I was like, this is, like, but Stomp.
And it kept, like, flashing to, like, what was going on with Mr. Mercado, and then there was, like, the gate and all of the stuff, and you're like, is Reed supposed to be seeing this or whatever? Anyway, he has this debilitating migraine, and he's sitting there leaning back in his chair, staring directly up into a fluorescent light.
As like, one does when you have a migraine. Yeah, I was like, there's so many hand drums happening, and then they like do the rhythmic flashing of all these images for Reed. Like, this is like the gate thumping and the birds calling.
And it's unclear on if he's supposed to be seeing these images.
Yeah. I didn't like it.
It was annoying.
Mm-hmm.
I'm like, now I have a migraine. Thank you.
Yeah.
but it seems that he has some sort of a realization because he like sits up and like looks back down at his book.
Yeah.
So then we see Mr. Mercado is taped to a chair, and he's having the blood of a dove poured onto his head while Tootie is just barking her head off. And then somebody just machetes him to death from behind.
While Tootie watches. Yeah. No, it's not going to go well for either of them.
No. So Reed and Morgan then arrive at a professor's office, and they're told to wait because he's in class right now. And then Hotch calls to tell them about the newest attack.
Mm-hmm.
And they realize that anyone talking to them could be at risk because they had just talked to this guy the day before.
Mm-hmm.
So then the professor comes in, Hollis Walker. He asks what he can do to help them. And like, you know, they don't know this poor man. He's just like a religious studies professor or whatever. And they just throw this pile of really grisly crime scene photos on his desk. And he's like, oh my God.
Yeah, he has a moment where he's like having trouble looking at it. And Reed's like,
could you imagine if somebody did that to you?
No.
Like, because you have some vague association with what they think might be going on with these crime scenes, and they're like, look at this man who's been macheted to death. Like, I would never sleep again. That's horrifying.
Do you notice anything unusual about this photo of a man that's been hacked apart with a machete? And I'd be like, yeah, there's a man who's been hacked apart with a machete in it. I find that very unusual. But Reed makes some remark with his sunglasses on about how, you never get used to it.
Yeah, he's like, it's hard. It never gets easier. Mm. And the guy's like, oh, all right. And he, like, looks down at it for 10 seconds, and he's like, well, there's definitely some Santeria here, but also unbaptized Paulo Mayumbe.
Yeah.
What
makes it unbaptized?
I don't know. They don't ever call it that again either.
Look, I'm such a white girl, because every time they said Santeria, I was just singing the song in my head.
Yeah, yeah, me too.
And then I wasn't really paying attention to what they were saying.
But yeah, he's like, it's unbaptized Paulo Mayumbe, an incredibly obscure and secretive religion that I happen to be writing a book about right now. And Morgan and Reed are like, cool, that's not suspicious.
Right. And they're like, well, don't tell us any more about that.
Yeah.
Moving on.
I'm like, wait a minute.
Emily, why would he lie?
Immediate red flag. So Prentice, Seaver, and Hotch head to Mr. Mercado's house, where they seem pretty unbothered by the headless, handless corpse that's taped to the kitchen chair.
Yeah.
But then they're like, is that a dog? Which, like, they have no problem showing us, like, the bloodied stump of a neck, but they do not pan to the dog. We are not shown not that I wanted to be shown the dog, but I just thought it was really funny that they're like, a dead dog, that's a bridge too far.
They're like, it must be pretty bad if they can't even show us that.
The viewing public can't handle that. But I guess that would be maybe particularly upsetting for Seaver.
Mm.
Because her dad killed that dog in front of her?
Maybe.
I don't know. But even, like, Hotch and Prentice are like, oh, my God.
Yeah. They're like, what is it? Because they don't tell you at first. I'm like, oh, it's just the dog.
Yeah. So Reed and Walker discuss the amorality of nature religions. They don't recognize right and wrong, but rather balance and imbalance. Walker says that Paulo Mayumbe is the only religion that harnesses the spirits of the dead. Mm-hmm. And he shows them a picture of an Nganga, yeah, which is like a head shrine thing. Mm-hmm. That uses body parts of victims to give the palero or the priest his power. Mm-hmm. And they keep saying palero, mm-hmm, but I have this book in my classroom and it's about a palatero man who is a guy who sells popsicles, to like fruit popsicles. Mm-hmm. And it's a really cute book, but that's what I kept thinking every time. Like, palatero man. I'm like, no.
This guy's not selling those. The professor like looks at some of the photos and he's like, well, you know, outside of the human head, this all seems very traditional. Like, what?
You're like, does it?
I'm sorry, what? No. And then Reed says something about the fingers and hands and he goes, well, that's not good.
Like, yeah.
Really? That's the line too far.
Well, because he says that the body parts they use are typically given through like donations of like families of the dead people, yeah, or by like, grave robbing, mm-hmm, but not sacrifice. And then when they tell him about the hands, he says that the unsub might be building an Nganga to Kadeyambepe, who is devil-like deity. I practice saying these words.
I'm impressed.
Which requires the finger bones from 7 different corpses.
Mm. And he's only got how many so far?
4.
Only 4.
Yeah.
3 more bodies needed.
Yeah. And then we get a lot of profile. We have not had any profile, right, in a while.
I was thinking, wow, it's been a few episodes. We've had like 2 or 3 episodes in a row with no profile, and
they were saving.
They make up for lost time. Yeah. So, the unsub is a lone male. There was no evidence to suggest more than one individual at any of the crime scenes. He is behaviorally young, probably between 17 and 22. Someone's like, behaviorally young? What are you talking about? If he spent time in jail or been institutionalized, he could be chronologically older. Those lost years retard behavioral age. He's part of the community, most likely Hispanic or Black. We believe that he uses some sort of religious connection to get close to his victims, either Santeria or Paulo Mayumbe. Now, you said it all so well that I'm going to. And then there's a couple of the local guys, once he starts mentioning Paulo Mayumbe, who like look really suspicious. They're like exchanging glances and like touching their weapons. I don't know. Obviously, this is a very sensitive issue within the community. He may be a practitioner who people trust and rely on for healing. Instead, he uses their vulnerability to prey on them. And they let Seaver talk in this.
I know. She has a line.
Why are you letting her talk? She doesn't know anything about this.
Yeah.
She's just here for remediation. Why is she participating?
I mean, she does say like the dumbest thing.
She does. But but it just, I was like shocked. I was taken aback. Why are they letting Seaver talk? Because it's a very traditional profile delivery where they're all lined up shoulder to shoulder.
They step forward, say mm-hmm. their piece, and then step back.
Right, into the spotlight.
Yeah.
So I was like, there's no reason for her to be talking. He's highly organized in his planning, but then impulsive in his execution, indicating that his emotions take over once he gets started. This tells us that while he may think that he has an objective reason for the killings, he actually has a compulsion, which is the real reason behind them. And this has resulted in a rapid escalation of his MO and his time frame. He's become more efficient and more violent. This makes him unpredictable and even more dangerous. He focuses on victims who are fragile and vulnerable and then creates relationships with them. We need to look for someone who has close access to people in need. He may work in a government aid office or a community center. And then we're interrupted. There's a phone call from Garcia that we don't hear any of. But don't worry, they go back to the profile. So we miss a little bit of it, but then they continue. Maybe he even exhibits flashes of temper. Because of the ages of his victims, we believe he may have been abused as a child and is taking revenge on parental figures. Look for someone who's been in the juvenile system or in foster care. Thank you.
Yeah. So the phone call that they get mm-hmm. is Garcia calling in to inform Morgan that all of the victims were patrons of the community center that they visited mm-hmm. because, and she knows this because they had all signed in on their logs, which
are apparently digital.
I'm sure are it's not available a sheet of paper. In some digitized way.
It's like, not just a sheet of paper at
because
the door.
This is like a very insular community. Mm-hmm. Like, it does not strike me as the kind of place where they would have a sign-in log.
No. Not at all.
Like, it seems like it's like the community doing things for itself, not like a government funded kind of, you know what I mean?
Where so they're like keeping records
where they would be
something.
Keeping records like that.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, it was like, what? Okay. Sure. Sure. I'm sure those are digitized.
That's something she looked up from in DC.
Yeah. Yeah, and they'd be, like, available somewhere.
Right. Yeah.
Not just, like, on somebody's, like, Excel spreadsheet.
Right? I just refuse to believe this is anything but a stack of pieces of paper that no one ever looks at again once somebody's done it.
Or if anything, they just count the number of people that they served that day.
Right.
To keep track of, like, numbers.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Like, yeah, there's no way.
Right. Like, at our daycare, you have to sign in, sign out, and it's, like, a clipboard at the classroom door. And I know that they, like, keep them on file, like, should there be a reason to, like, make sure someone signed or signed out.
But nobody's looking
nobody's looking at those. Nobody's entering them into a digital file.
Yeah.
Like, they just need your signature on the piece of paper.
Yeah.
In case, you know? Which I cannot see.
I know, that was so, it was so silly.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, Morgan and Reed, who is still just inexplicably wearing a cardigan.
Yeah.
In Miami.
Yes.
Like, everybody else is just, like, wearing an unbuttoned shirt.
But he
is wearing, like, a button-down, a cardigan.
And his sunglasses.
The sunglasses.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah, they walk in on...
Oh, wait, so...
Is it the community center that they're walking into?
I guess it was supposed to be, and I guess they live there. It didn't make sense. I thought they were at a different location, but
when
maybe
it's
not.
Like, they call it a community center, but it seems like just a big old house where they're, like...
And where there's, like, a soup kitchen.
Yeah.
But I was watching this with the captions on, as I always do. And the captions for this part just said, responsive chanting in Afro-Caribbean language.
Yes, it did.
I was like, oh, my God.
But yeah, they walk in on this ritual being performed, which involves a chicken sacrifice being performed by the man who was serving the meals earlier, who said he doesn't talk to cops. And it's very weird because nothing untoward is happening here.
No.
Like, they walk in and, like, yes, it might be like an unfamiliar ceremony to you.
Yeah.
But like,
there's
everyone
a crowd of people,
is,
everyone's participating.
Everyone
being
is participating.
Hurt.
Everyone is like,
is it like they're
into
torturing
it?
Someone or something?
No. But Morgan walks in, and they don't show it, but he's holding his shoulders in a way that implies that
he's holding his weapon,
walking with his gun drawn into this religious ceremony. Mm-hmm. I'm like, calm down.
Yeah, and he's like, we didn't come here to create a spectacle. I'm
like yes,
just,
you did.
You interrupted their ritual and came
blazing
in here. Yeah. I just don't understand. Yeah.
Like, not only is it so inappropriate to do that,
mm-hmm.
it's also a terribly ineffective way to get someone to want to talk to you.
Right, right. How are you going to... They go on and on about this insular community, and they're not going to get anyone to talk to them.
Yeah.
And then they're just
and
pissed
Morgan
off everybody
such
in there.
A dick from, like, this point on for the rest of the episode. Like, just insanely aggressive for no reason.
Right, yeah.
Want to take him in, and the guy looks at Reed and he says, I'll go with you.
Yeah.
Like, specifically.
Mm-hmm. I would do that too, because Morgan's being a jerk.
Yeah. And he, like, turns and looks at this other guy that's in the middle of the ritual, and he, like, picks up the chicken, like, continues on.
He picks up the decapitated chicken and they finish.
So he's going to carry out the rest of the ritual for the group. So Garcia looks into the guy whose name is Julio. It turns out he is a former gang member who grew up in foster care. The gang he was in was called Los Machetes, and it's known for cutting off the heads and hands of their victim. And how has that not come up already in this investigation?
That's just
cops
bad
love,
police work.
Love to blame everything on gang violence.
Right.
There's no way that the first thing
they didn't do was blame this gang.
Was blame this
I
gang.
Know. I love they give the description of the stuff the gang does, and Hotch just goes subtle. Like, seriously.
They're called Los Machetes. Yeah. What kind of weapons do they use? But yeah, he, was put in jail, and has been on the straight and narrow since he was released from jail in 2003. So this episode was 2010. So it's been quite a while that he's been on the up and up here.
Mm-hmm.
So Reed goes in to talk to him, and Hotch sends Rossi.
Oh, wait, I'm sorry. Before they get to the police station, when they're leaving the community center, they pass the gate. And Reed, like, the gate that's been banging that we've seen over and over. And Reed stops and looks at it like he has been having these visions.
Yeah.
And like he has seen it before in his mind. He's like, oh, wait, this is a real place. Look, I know that
place. So are you supposed to think he's having actual visions of things? Like he's having psychic visions?
I guess so.
It's weird.
It's weird. So I think that's important to bring that up before he goes in to talk to this guy. But yes. I just, I was very confused by that moment.
Let's see, where am I? I lost my
place. I'm sorry, now I threw you off.
I know. Right. Okay, so Hotch sends Rossi and Seaver to go check out where Julio lives, which is ostensibly a room at the
community center. Yeah.
And Morgan tells him also about the teenager that took over for him in the ritual. He's like, hey, you might want to look into that guy too.
Yeah.
So Julio tells Reed that the victims were his godchildren, the people who came to him for healing. And Julio tells him that human sacrifice is not a part of their religion. But Reed says something about the Nganga. Mm-hmm. And he's like, wait, what do you know about Paulo?
Yeah.
But Julio also implies that he knows that Reed is having headaches.
Which, do you need to be a religious practitioner to notice that Reed is having a migraine moment?
His headache behavior is so over the top.
It's like when children don't feel good. And like, does somebody have to tell you or?
Yeah. Children or like when I don't feel good. And I just sit there like laying around just being like, I'm going to die. I'm like, did you get that because of your psychic powers? Or did you get that because he's wearing sunglasses in a relatively dark room? And also holding his head.
Yeah,
he's grimacing and groaning.
He's not subtle about having a headache.
So Rossi, Seaver, and Prentice go look around Julio's room, and then they find a little shrine with a cowrie face, shell face on it. So the detective shows Hotch and Morgan some of the crime scene photos of the Los Machetes murders. And then Morgan just like comes running in and starts waving them around in Julio's face and yelling at him and stuff. And it's like, okay, he knows that they were bad. Like he clearly has like reformed himself. Calm down.
Right. Like, it's very weird.
Yeah. I'm like, way to destroy any rapport that Reed has been building here by like putting him on the defensive. So Prentice, Rossi, and Seaver then head into the kids' room where they find a bloody shoe. Mm-hmm. Big old bag of heroin, as well as the Paulo shrine with the Nganga and
the fingers. Fingers.
And, yeah. And like part of a brain or something.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
So Julio then starts chanting in another language very intensely.
Yeah. I just love, he's like scream chanting in another language in Reed's face, and everyone is just stone faced. Letting him do his thing. Like, no one interrupts. Yeah. No one says, what the fuck do you think is happening?
They don't even make eye contact with each other. Like, what?
They're just stone.
Yeah. But, yeah, the kid comes into the room, sees three FBI agents standing there, and then just takes off.
Yep.
And because it's Prentice, Rossi, and Seaver, they do not catch him.
No, he just, into the wind he goes. Yes. He's gone.
He is gone. So Reed and Morgan think what they just saw in Julio was transpossession, which is a phenomenon of religious hysteria where he believes his body was taken over by a saint. Hotch asked the detective what Julio said.
I love this.
And it's the detective says, brother, I'm a Puerto Rican Catholic who grew up in Orlando. That wasn't a language I've ever heard, which like, is the perfect Hotch. Response to that weirdly racist question.
Yes.
Hotch is like, Hotch. You're not white. Yeah, you're what not did that white. Man what did he just say?
Like, oh my God. Yeah, it was the best line in the whole episode.
Loved it. It was so good.
I wrote it down too, like word for word. I was like, yes.
It was so good. So Reed goes back in to Julio and to ask him what he said. He's like, don't worry, I remember all the words.
Yeah.
You're like, you have a photographic memory, not
he has an eidetic memory.
Does that mean
But you I, don't, can remember. I don't know if that means you remember everything anyone's ever said at you.
Can Plus, you imagine if you had perfect recall of every conversation you've ever overheard, even in another language? Like, your brain
And my brain would explode. Yeah. It would just be mush. Break. But you know what the most disconcerting part of this was? That this was the moment I noticed that Reed is wearing his watch on the outside of his long sleeve shirt.
Yeah. He does that.
And I can't. I hate it every time.
Can you imagine how sweaty his wrists have to be?
Right in Miami. Aren't they in Miami? And he's wearing this. I mean, it should just be a watch print under there, right? I was like, ugh.
Yeah. So he goes in to talk to him, and Hotch is like, hey, Morgan, is Reed okay? Morgan's like, I don't know.
So, like, it doesn't matter.
So Reed repeats all the words back to Julio, who tells him that the saint told Reed that the bad spirits are spoiling his head.
Mm-hmm.
And Julio says that somebody is about to get hurt and he can just feel it.
Mm-hmm.
So Morgan comes in again, just starts screaming at him, to tell him that heroin and an ngongo are found in Elion, who is the kid, that's a kid's name,
yeah,
in Elion's room, and that he's on the run now. Julio seems to really genuinely care about him and be surprised by their accusation that he could be the Polero who's, yeah, like, involved in all of this.
Mm.
He says that Elion's parents were junkies and that he took him in and got him clean, and he just wants to help them find him before he gets hurt.
Mm-hmm.
So we learn that Elion was thrown in juvie for assault against Julio and got out just a week ago, right when the murders happened.
What?
They also learned that the tongue and the hands of the last victim were cut off while he was still alive.
Yeah.
Ugh. So Julio then performs a ritual to help them find the killer, which he's like summoning the saints or whatever. Yeah. By like
doing... And they're all just in a move I don't find authentic of the BAU in any way, allow him to do it.
Well, the other cop's like, do we have time for this? And Hodge is like, if it helps him find it, we have time for this. And you're like, you never have time for anything reasonable.
Right? It was just way too reasonable and way, like a way to, I don't know, ingratiate themselves with him in a way that I feel like they would not normally do.
It seemed out of character.
Mm-hmm.
But then they give Julio the details of the crime, and Julio tells them that Polero would not take the brain but leave the head.
Yeah.
Like, they would take all of it. And that the tongue in the dish has nothing to do with any Paulo ritual, and that's just weird.
Mm-hmm.
So Hotch is like, so that's the unsub signature.
Like, sure. No.
So that's not going to come up again. But Julio tells them
How could it be a signature if he only did that at one of the four crime scenes? Right?
You would think it would have to be more than once.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. But Julio tells them that Elion is an angry kid, but he wouldn't do this. Mm-hmm. Like, this is not, like, really out of character for him. Reed thanks him for his help, and Julio tells him that his head is full of ghosts from the job that he does. Mm-hmm. It's like, yeah, that seems reasonable. Your job is incredibly stressful and would take a ton of, like...
It would,
like,
give me a lot of migraines, too.
Like, it would take a huge emotional toll on you to do that. Like, I would also have debilitating migraines. Yeah. So the team says... This is great, though. They're all talking around, and they're like, Elion fits the profile too well.
Mm.
Like, their assumption is not like, wow, guys, we really nailed it. Right. They're like, he fits every part of the profile, so...
It can't be him.
It can't be him.
That never happens. I was like, wait.
We're not that good.
Isn't the whole point that it should? That the person you arrest should? Like, that's the ideal?
No, but their immediate assumption is that someone must be framing him because he fits the profile too well. They profiled this person exactly.
Mm-hmm.
Which doesn't make any sense because that person would have to understand... Not just profiling, but this particular team of profilers well enough to know exactly what they would have come up with,
mm-hmm.
which is nonsense. But
no,
sure.
No, Emily, it's not. It's not any more nonsense than the profiling to begin with.
Yeah. And they're like, who is smart enough and controlled enough to pull this off? It must be someone we've met. And you're like, well, you've only met three people.
Right.
So, mm-hmm. And they're like, and finally... Who would benefit from a bunch of media attention being paid to this obscure religion? Could it be the professor who just told us he was publishing a book on this religion?
And who is such an expert that he didn't point out all of the things that didn't make any sense.
Yeah, that Julio was just like, that's not Paulo. That's not Paulo. Yeah. That's not Paulo. Because when they showed him, he was like, all this stuff is straightforwardly Paulo.
Yeah, like, what?
Yeah. So they think that he is, whoever this is, or they, you know, they think it's Walker, but mm-hmm. they think that he's setting up Elyon to be the fall guy to get attention for his upcoming book.
I was like, that's a lot of work to publicize your
which
book.
Which is hilarious, too, because, like, you know the kind of books that, like,
professors
write. This is not going to be, like...
They're, like, academic journal things. They're not, like, Times novels. Bestseller. Right.
Like, you're not Anne Rule.
Right.
That's
like, this
not
is
what you're writing
not,
here.
Right. It's like,
you're writing books so
Eric
that you
Lawson
can...
killing people because he wrote, I don't know, about the Lusitania or something. Yeah. Like, I just don't understand.
Yeah, it's nonsense. Mm-hmm. But yeah, Julio heads home looking for Elyon and is attacked by someone we can't see. Mm-hmm. But he's wearing, like, pleated front trousers. Uh-huh. So we can assume it's not the 17-year-old
right.
So we also learn that Walker grew up in a very abusive home after his mother's suicide, and that his father was also an academic who wrote about African religions.
Mm-hmm.
Walker is not at home, and no one's at the community center, despite a disturbance having been reported there not too long ago.
Mm-hmm. But nobody saw anything, apparently, outside of the community center?
No.
Anyway.
Yeah. So Reed is having another episode. It's very dramatic.
It is.
But he's like up in the bedroom.
And
it's Julian's,
more helpful visions.
Or Julian. In Julio's bedroom. I just combined Julio and Elyon. He's up in Julio's bedroom and he's like looking around and looks. And he has a framed newspaper article mm-hmm. about the house that was the foster home he grew up in on his bedside table.
Yes.
Which seems like a weird thing to keep on your bedside table.
Sure does, but yeah. It's there. It's there.
I have a picture of my kids.
Right.
On my bedside table.
It's a framed news article on the bedside table directly underneath an open window overlooking the exact house.
Yeah.
That's the exact
It's right outside house. The yeah. window. It's like, do you need the photograph?
It's right there.
I mean, I guess my kids are also in my house. Look at them whenever I want.
Why do you need a picture of them? They're already in the house.
In case anything ever happens to them and I have to show the cops a picture and be like, here's
and
a recent
photo
of them.
And prove that you're a loving mother and not a psychopath with no pictures of your
exactly.
family. Yeah.
I put all the pictures up after I started watching this show. I didn't have any before. So he somehow just like...
goes over there?
Like
does he
leaves?
Crawl out the window?
I don't know.
No one sees him leave.
No one sees him leave. And yeah. the people are like surrounding the house. Mm-hmm. But anyway, he heads over to the house. It's the house with the gate and keeps flapping in the wind. And no reason why he didn't take someone with him.
No.
This is exactly what Seaver got yelled at for.
Right.
Just going off on her own.
And he's already, we watched him take his bulletproof vest off because he was having a migraine. He had to take it off.
Yeah. Because he's too hot.
Well, he is wearing long sleeves and a cardigan.
Take off a layer. You know, if you start overheating. That's not the layer you take off where you take off the dumb cardigan.
Yes.
But anyway, he is confronted by Walker, mm-hmm. who has just gone insane mm-hmm. at this point. He's
yeah.
just like a Batman villain.
Mm-hmm.
And he's like, you shouldn't be here. And everybody's looking around for Reed. And Reed sees that Julio and Elyon are tied up in mm-hmm. the other room. So Reed tries to relate to Walker by saying that they're both really smart.
Mm-hmm.
They're both smart guys. They don't need guns. They have books. And Walker gives him just a full-on villain speech.
Well, yeah.
Like, lays out the whole plan. He's mm-hmm. just, he wants to one-up his father, basically.
Right.
And
yeah.
like, he's like, and then I'm gonna kill Julio mm-hmm. and leave him, but then... Elyon is going to have like a heroin overdose. So it's going to look like he killed himself after completing the ritual. And it's like, why would he complete his whole ritual just to kill himself? That
right.
doesn't make any sense
right.
at all.
No.
But then he gives like the whole plan. And then he, like Reed is just like holding his head. And at one point he like stops and he's like, what is wrong with you? I'm like, oh, did the saints tell you that there is something wrong with him? It's like, dude, you are not okay. But Reed points out that Walker has made a crucial mistake, that in order for his father to know what he's actually done to outdo his mm-hmm. legacy or whatever, he has to get caught or else no one will ever know. And it's like, not really, because if he becomes a bestseller about all of this, then he's showed his father what he can do.
It doesn't,
it's the third act. Everything falls apart like it always does, but it's fun to watch. But then Rossi and Morgan see the same photo of the house and then they look out the window and they're like, so then everybody heads over there.
Well, they find, and they find, Reed's bulletproof vest on the floor of the bedroom, and Rossi picks it up and goes, well, this is not good. Like, no, it is not.
So yeah, then they all just go over and they're like, all right, you're done here. And Morgan arrests Walker, and Walker's like, do you think my father will come visit me in prison? Will I be famous enough? And they're like, no, get out of here. So Julio tells Reed that the saints guided him to them and gives him a talisman and says it will protect him.
Yeah.
And Reed's like, no, I saw that picture.
Yeah.
And Julio's like, do you really believe that? And you're like, you've been having visions. You would think that would be something where you would be like, oh, that's weird.
Mm. I just love that after, like, at the end of all this, they take Walker out and Julio just stands up. He just, like, stands up and leaves the room.
Yeah.
Like, he's no like, one well, paying attention.
See you later.
Yep. All done here. Thanks for your time.
So Hotch asks Reed if he's okay. And Reed was like, no, I'm fine. I was pretending to have a headache. And you're like, just say I have a headache.
Like, I don't
it doesn't make any sense.
Yeah.
So anyway, back at the doctor, the doctor tells Reed that there's no physical explanation for his headaches. Mm. And I was like, oh, I thought he was going to have, like, a brain tumor that causes him to have psychic visions of crimes, and the show is going to take a weird turn. And the doctor's like, you know, it could be like something like psychosomatic. And he's like, no, I'm not crazy. And he's like, no, I'm just saying, like, you could be under a massive amount of stress. Mm-hmm. It could be like, you know, emotional reasons for having these. And Reed throws a huge temper tantrum.
Yeah.
And he's like, my mother's a paranoid schizophrenic and I know mental illness better than you. And you don't know what you're talking about. And I'm not crazy and blah, blah, blah. And you're like, that's not what this doctor said.
Right.
He said migraines can be triggered by massive amounts of stress, which you are currently under, sir. Yeah. Always. In your whole life.
So are they trying to imply that they're not finding any physical reason for his headaches because he got the talisman from Julio?
I have no idea. I don't think so.
Because we never talk about it again, right? Do they ever bring this up again?
The headaches?
It's a long time.
Yeah. I feel like the headaches pop up a few times and then they never really go anywhere.
Yeah.
Because I remember watching it the first time and I thought that the headaches were like a setup for the Maeve storyline.
Yeah.
But
it's not.
Yeah. It just goes nowhere.
I know. Like, so it's like, it was like,
yeah. Cause I thought, like, I'm in spoiler alert, everyone. Yeah. I thought that we were all going to find out that Maeve was a hallucination and was never real because of the headaches. But then there's the whole Maeve thing. And then Reed just stops getting headaches.
Right.
I don't know.
I don't know.
But anyway, when we get our end quote, the best and most beautiful things in life cannot be seen or even touched. They must be felt with the heart. Helen Keller. Yes. Yeah.
So, there you have it.
That's that.
Well, would you like to start with statistics or profile?
Statistics. Because they'll change now.
Mm-hmm, they
will. I want to know if we're back to 83%.
Close. So we are 12-3 for season 6, bringing us to 80% white men.
Oh.
I'm not even rounding. 80-20
nice.
Is what our spread is now. Overall, 119-26, 82% white men overall.
It's really racist of you to be tracking these statistics. Best review we've ever gotten,
yes,
by the way.
Seriously. And well, I'm sure someone will argue because this guy is mixed race. The father is very obviously a stolid old white man academic that he's trying to impress, of course. What a jerk. So, I was just waiting for someone to be like, well...
We're doing the best we can here.
Right. I mean,
we can't track statistics that carefully.
Right. Yeah. I wasn't willing to make that call. As far as this profile, and boy, is there a profile. As far as accuracy, helpfulness, and plausibility on a scale of 1 to 10, how would you rate it? It's a tough call.
I know. I mean, again, pretty accurate. I don't know how plausible it actually is.
Right.
And it like a lot of jumping to conclusions. Again, but they
don't
are.
Office. They don't often like have it be helpful.
If it was Ilion, it would be a great profile. A lot of it did have to do with Walker too.
Yeah.
But except he's way older.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I don't see how he's behavior, like what about him is behaviorally 17 to 22 besides he's the still killing
trying to
impress his dad.
I don't know.
But he hasn't been institutionalized that we know of, so I don't know what would...
No, not institutionalized, but like...
Because wasn't he
in like a boarding school?
Oh, yeah. I forgot about that.
That feels institutional.
That's true.
That's kind of a prison.
He was in a boarding school that he spent even his vacations at because his dad was such a bad dad.
I know. Like Harry Potter at Hogwarts. Right? Having Christmas there. Mm-hmm. So sad.
So sad. Poor Walker.
Yeah.
I don't know. Anyways. I guess it's one a of fine the better profile. Ones. Yeah. Like six, maybe?
Yeah, six or seven.
Yeah. It's not terrible. Would you do any hotch watching with this? I don't feel like you really did much.
Not really.
Nothing polarizing, at least.
No.
Hotch is still a perfect 10. It's hard to believe that we're this far into season 6 and he hasn't ruined things for himself. But, you know, I was looking back at statistics for previous seasons and we've had 2 previous seasons where 3 was the only amount of not white men that we've had. Oh. So I'm curious to see the trajectory of the rest of this season.
Yeah, because we're only about halfway through it now.
Yeah, and I think the most that we've ever had is 7. So, I mean, not a great deal anyway, but
yeah,
I'm just curious to see.
We haven't had many. Have we had any? How many females on subs have we had so far?
This season or ever?
This season. Of course, I'm putting you on the spot. I can't remember.
I don't remember. I don't track genders. Only white or not white.
I just couldn't remember. I couldn't remember off the top of my head. We never have very many.
No, besides this episode, I can't remember what the other two were.
Yeah.
The next episode is the 13th step. Did you remember?
Oh, there's
one?
A female one. Yeah. This one has one of the girls from. She was in Friday Night Lights.
Oh, right. Yes.
One of my many times when we were watching Friday Night Lights. And I was like, that person was on Criminal Minds.
Yeah, I do remember this one.
Yes.
I do. But I'm still looking forward to the rewatch of this one.
Yeah.
Are you still looking up for women?
No, I was looking up to see if Paulo Mayumbe was a real religion.
Oh.
And Paulo is it is real.
Mm. So like what about unbaptized Paulo Mayumbe?
It didn't say anything about that specifically.
That's the part I found confusing.
Yeah.
Unbaptized Paulo Mayumbe.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I'm like, oh, I want to read all of this. It sounds really interesting. It's an Afro-Cuban religion.
Mm.
Yeah.
I think I don't know.
I'm going to be an expert and I'm going to write a book about it.
So if people start dying around here, I'll know who to blame.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, wherever you're listening, be sure to leave a 5-star review. You can find us on Instagram and TikTok at The Unsub Is A White Man. Our merch is on Redbubble. If you get any, make sure you tag us. We'll share you to our stories. Our theme music is composed and performed by Nate Youngblood, and the podcast is produced by Nate Youngblood. Thanks, Nate.
And until next week, we'll be in the land of Bermuda Shorts.